You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on the show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. Welcome, everybody, to In the Garden with UC Master Gardeners. I'm Katrina Kirkaby, and I'm here today with Tina Spindler, and we're going to be talking about January, what to do in the garden in January. Can you believe it's January already, Tina?
No, but Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! Oh my God, my goodness, I should say, when I said that, I went, January, wow.
Yeah, 2016. Can you believe it's 2016?
Amazing. And you know what's also amazing? We always find something to do in the garden.
Well, you know, if you live in other parts of the country, January is a time where you're probably not in the garden at all.
Or you can't even see your garden. It's under snow.
Exactly. But if you live in Southern California, there is no rest for the weary. And January is actually, for me, one of the busiest months in the garden.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
So much to do. But if you do it now, it's over and done with, a lot of it.
Well, the thing about the January tasks is that if you do them now, you will have a much more successful year in your garden. And so I love it because it's the holidays are so hectic, and I'm kind of tired of being cooped up inside and all the cooking and all the cleaning. And so for me, getting out in the garden in January, assuming it's not raining, is just such a welcome relief from the hustle and bustle of the holidays.
And it's cool, and it gives you hope of spring and...
Yeah, it's one of my favorite times. So I know you have fruit trees, as I do, and it's a big fruit tree month. Should we talk about that first?
Let's talk about fruit trees.
Yeah. So what have you got in your garden? Refresh my memory.
As far as fruit trees?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. I have peach and apricot. I have oranges and nectarines. And cherries, and oh my goodness, and
any apples?
Oh, apples? Lots of apples. I just bought a pomegranate.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to be spotting pomegranate this year.
Fun.
And lemon trees. I have four different lemon trees because we use a lot of lemons. I cook a lot.
Yeah.
Fuji apples, Anna's apples. I think I have about a total of 40 plants.
Wow. You have more than
40
I do.
Trees.
40 trees. Yeah. Yeah, I think I've got probably 20-ish. So you've got twice as many as I do. But it doesn't really matter how many you have. What matters about January is what kind of fruit trees you have, because that'll determine what you need to do. And we're going to divide the fruit trees into two main categories. Basically, they are the deciduous trees, the ones that lose their leaves when it gets cold, and the evergreen trees that don't lose their leaves. So the evergreens that you have are the same ones that I have, which are the lemons and oranges, and then I also have a lime tree. I don't know if you have a lime tree or not. But so the citrus keeps their leaves all year, and those aren't going to be the ones that we're going to be focusing on today. We're going to be focusing on the deciduous trees because they're the ones that need to get all the attention this month.
My fig trees have grown.
Oh! So.
They're spindly right now with no leaves on them.
So the trees that lose their leaves, and let's talk about the categories of those trees. There's what are called the pome fruits, which are the apple, the pear, and the pomegranate. And then the stone fruits, and so we're talking there about the peaches, the apricots, the plums, the cherries, the nectarines, those are the stone fruits. And the reason that we need to talk about these guys this month is because January is when you plant these trees bare root if you're going to get new trees. And for our listeners, we actually did a whole show on bare root planting that is on our website, which is uccemg.com. So if you're interested in a whole show on bare root planting, you can go to our website and play that show's podcast, and you'll because we're not going to spend a lot of time on bare root planting. But briefly, you can plant bare root plants, primarily these fruit trees and roses, are sold in January, not planted. They come in little packages with their roots all wrapped up while they're dormant. And so it makes for a cheaper plant, because since they're not planted in soil and in a pot, the nursery people are able to sell them to you for a lot less. And also, because they're dormant, they don't go into transplant shock like a tree that, you know, you're taking out of a pot. So planting bare root is a great idea for these stone fruit deciduous trees and the pome fruit deciduous trees. But the other thing that Katrina and I are going to be really busy with is pruning.
Oh my goodness. And Tina and I are both in a pruning class too.
Yes. So if being a master gardener wasn't fun enough, we're going to become master pruners. Who knew? Who knew there was such a thing?
Oh, if you would have asked me 10 years ago.
Yeah, I know. I'm so cool.
I'm a master pruner.
Yeah.
I actually love the class.
I do too.
It's one of my favorite classes. I feel like a little kid.
Yeah, it's because we have tools. We have lots of tools we get to use.
Bought new tools.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll give
and
you
a bucket.
We'll give you updates on pruning as we go through the class. We'll share some of our wisdom, our newfound wisdom with you. And one of those pieces of wisdom is that January, when the trees are dormant or somewhat dormant, because in Southern California they don't always go fully dormant, but that's the time when you want to prune your fruit trees for a couple of reasons. You want to prune them for their health, because if you just let your trees grow kind of wild, you're going to have a lot of crossing branches. You're going to have too many fruit on your tree if you have unlimited branches.
And it could be smaller fruit and you could have more disease. And it's just a little bit of pruning now is worth so much more, less hassle in a few months from now.
Absolutely. So we'll actually do a talk, I think. We should... sometime in the near future, we'll record a show on some basic pruning techniques. We'll do a whole show on that, and maybe we can even get one of our experts, because Katrina and I are newbies.
And I've already talked to him, and he said yes.
Oh, good. Yeah. So Katrina already has a candidate for our radio show to do that. Awesome. So look for that in the future. But in the meantime, just know that in January, that is when you want to do some pruning of your fruit trees, and you can look on our Master Gardener website for some links to some information about how to prune, or you can go to the University of California a website, and there are actual books that you can order on pruning from the university's Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources. So suffice it to say that you do want to prune your deciduous fruit trees in January. And then after you prune them, do you dormant spray, Katrina?
Try to, I don't get as much in as they normally say, but...
So let me tell you what we mean by dormant spray. When your trees are dormant or sleeping and they don't have leaves on, it's a great time to prevent the coming year's insects and diseases from proliferating by spraying your trees with what's called a dormant spray. They are sprays that you can purchase at a nursery, either horticultural oils, and the oils work by coating the bark of the tree and smothering any overwintering insects or fungal organisms. Or the other kind of dormant spray are fungal dormant sprays that are specifically have a formula that will kill off the fungus spores that may be overwintering on your trees. The type that you use is dependent on the type of tree that you have. So for instance, peaches are susceptible to peach leaf curl, and for those you want to spray with a fungicide that is appropriate for peach leaf curl. And rather than get into all the technicalities of that, because we want to talk about a lot of stuff in January, if you go to a reputable nursery and you tell them that you want to spray for peach leaf curl, they contain copper in the fungicide, your nursery person will be able to take you by the hand over to the to that scary aisle. And
you know, that is so true. It is a scary aisle, and people's eyes glaze over, and they're, oh my God, what am I going to be doing? But it's, once you get there, the hardest part is getting in the aisle and saying, I need help.
Right.
And when you tell you need help, they will lead you to the right place, and there's directions on the bottle, and the people will be glad to tell you what to do, and it's really not that hard.
No, and honestly, I can remember finally after years of being a master gardener, you know, what sprays I need, but seriously, before that, because you only dormant spray once a year, it's like, what was that spray? And you just forget. So you can either Google it, you can go to our Master Gardener website, or you can go to a reputable nursery, tell them what kind of tree you have, tell them that you want a dormant spray for that particular tree. Or if you had a particular problem, you know, that you experienced in the last season, like peach leaf curl, you can mention that problem to them and they will recommend a dormant spray for that problem. But the term dormant spray just means spraying your tree with something that is used while the tree is dormant and doesn't have leaves on it. Yeah. And it can, like I said, either be oil based or it can be a fungicide type of spray. But don't be intimidated, and don't put it off, because what I was recommended to do, and I'll tell you, it has just saved my my garden. I do this with the roses too. Before I start pruning, mix up the dormant spray. If you do it before you even put a clippers or a lopper in your hand, if you already have it mixed up in a spray bottle, then you will use it. Because by the time you prune a rose bush, or by the time you prune your peach tree and you gather up all the trimmings and you rake all up all the mess and you throw it away, you're done.
Done.
You're ready for lunch, or
tomorrow.
Or there's laundry that needs to be done, or there's, you know, work that you need to do for getting ready for, you know, going back to work on a Monday. Whatever. You're just done. So another master gardener friend of mine recommended this in one of her talks, and she says, before you pick up the pruners, mix up the dormant spray. And
then makes if it's because you have energy then. Yeah, yeah, it's not a big deal.
You're excited, you know, you get out the tablespoon and you measure it. You can buy them pre-mixed, but I have so many roses and fruit trees that I buy the concentrate because it's cheaper, and then I mix it myself. But you put it in, you can, if you only have, you know, a couple of rose bushes, you can put it in a literal spray bottle, you know, just read the directions, put it in the spray bottle. If, like me and Katrina, you have a lot of trees or rose bushes you're going to need to spray, then you can get one of those canister sprayers mm-hmm. that holds a couple gallons and has a little hose attachment with a little wand that sprays. So it just depends on the size of your garden and how many plants you're going to have to spray, but definitely mix it up before you start pruning away.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
Because there's always an excuse when you're done.
Oh, yeah.
And there's always tomorrow when you're done.
Yeah, it's like, well, that's me. I was always going to do it. Oh, I'm so tired. I'll do that tomorrow or the next day. And then all of a sudden it's March and the trees have leafed out and they never got sprayed. And what happens when you don't spray is that, particularly for your roses, for instance, there's a lot more prevalence of the fungal diseases like black spot and powdery mildew and all of those, rust, all of those diseases that make our roses not look so hot. So,
and by the way, Tina's roses, I just can't believe how they're just beautiful all the time. And I believe part of that is because you take care of it in January.
I have to tell you, you know, I had as much problem with the fungal diseases as anybody else until I started dormant spraying. It has changed my life.
Investment now for a future gain, so to speak.
It is. It's absolutely, you know, you still have to, you know, if you want beautiful roses, feed them and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, deadhead them during the year. But if you really want to limit the disease, the dormant spraying has really been helpful for me.
Gotcha.
So we started out talking about fruit trees. And so with the fruit trees, just to recap, you want to plant bare root if you want new fruit trees. If you want to keep your deciduous fruit trees really looking good.
Can I say something
sure.
about planting bare root
yeah,
and fruit
definitely.
Trees? You know, when you're looking for a fruit tree, they sell a lot of different fruit trees here, but we don't have a lot of chill hours.
I'm so glad you mentioned that.
So many people, including myself, before I knew, I just wanted a certain fruit. And sure, I can grow it here because I can garden. But really, fruit trees need to have a certain amount of chill hours. And when you're looking at that tree, either look on the package or look it up, because it's kind of wasting money. Unless you just like a pretty looking tree that doesn't have any fruit on it. But buy something that will grow in this area and that will produce in this area. So look for chill hours, and that's the number of hours a year that it's under, what, 40 degrees?
45.
45 degrees, mm-hmm. And make sure it fits within the area that you live, because you might be disappointed if it doesn't. And might as well get a tree that just produces a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a great website that we recommend, and they work this grower works with master gardeners and gives talks. In fact, I think that's who you're mm-hmm. hoping to have give our little
he said he would.
Pruning talk. And that is Dave Wilson Nurseries. So just Google Dave Wilson Nurseries. You will find so much information about deciduous fruit trees on their website, better than any other place. And it will talk about planting bare root. It will talk about chill hours. It will give you a list of the names of the varieties of the apple trees, the peach trees, the apricot trees that will grow in our area that don't need a lot of winter chill.
I have a lot of fruit trees, and it made it so easy for me, because then you can go there and you can see what will grow in my area with the right amount of, and then it describes each variation of that tree. And then we were able just to read through it and find out what fit our needs, what do we like.
Exactly, because they'll actually tell you, give a description of the flavor of the fruit, whether it's, for instance, an apple. Is it a tart fruit? Is it a firm-fleshed fruit? Is it sweet? Does it have a long shelf life after you harvest? Or is it delicious, but you have to eat it relatively quickly or preserve it quickly? So they give you so much information by the name of each variety. You can decide whether you want an Anna apple or a Fuji apple or, you know, Golden Dorset. You'll be able to read about each of the characteristics of those apples.
And if the apple that you've always mm-hmm. loved just won't do well in here, your neighborhood,
yes.
It's good to know it up front instead of several years down the line.
Exactly. If you grew up back east and you loved pippin apples, they are not low chill. So, you know, you'd probably be better off not, if you have limited space, especially, to choose a variety that will take low chill.
And the name of that nursery again is?
Dave Wilson Nursery. And just Google that, click on their website, and you will find out so much information about fruit trees. It's
and
just
then
awesome.
They sell to a lot of nurseries down here.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that you know, I'd recommend is that when you're going to buy a fruit tree, because it's such a long-term investment, it's not like buying, you know, marigolds, which are going to last for a few months and then you rip them out. You buy an apple tree, you're going to want to hopefully have that apple tree for many years. So don't be afraid to go to a good nursery and ask a qualified nurseryman to tell you a little bit about the trees that you're considering buying, because they often have experience in that. And also, you'll probably see the tags on their trees might say Dave Wilson Nursery, because that is a grower that supplies a lot of our local nurseries. So
good reputation.
Yeah.
And when you're also planting that tree, you got to realize that tree might be really little right now, but it's going to grow.
Which is another good point, Katrina, because what we didn't mention was choosing the type of rootstock for the size space that you have. So in other words, trees grow on, can be dwarf trees, or they can be semi-dwarf trees, or they can be full-size, you know, regular, what are called standard trees. And if you have a small garden or you want to grow it in a container, and you can grow fruit trees in containers. We have wine barrel grown trees at the Great Park, which are doing fabulous. So if you don't think you have enough room for fruit trees, you probably do if you choose dwarf varieties. Or the other thing you can do is espalier them. And that means just trimming them so that they grow up against a fence. They grow flat along a fence. And if you want to see what that looks like, go out to the Farm and Food Lab demonstration garden out at the Great Park. There are, gosh, I think we have 100 espaliers fruit trees out there.
It's beautiful. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, and so you can grow fruit trees. It doesn't matter. If you live in a condo or an apartment and you want to grow them in a pot, good for you. Choose a dwarf variety. Or if you think you're going to be, you own your place and you think you're going to be there for a long time, you can plant one in the ground and espalier it so that it grows against a fence and have a wonderful, wonderful fruit tree, even in a limited amount of space.
My stepdaughter always thought, my husband told her, that a house is not a house without a lemon tree. And she, growing up, she just thought every house had a lemon tree. When she found out that all houses didn't have a lemon tree, it was just kind of cute. As an adult, she goes, it doesn't have a lemon tree. But it doesn't. Lemons don't have to take up very much room. You could have them in a pot, and you have fresh lemons all the time, and you could do that with all kinds of trees.
Yeah,
it doesn't work for all trees.
But right.
It's amazing how many you can grow smaller.
Yeah, and that's because fruit tree growers have grafted the fruit-producing part of the plant onto a rootstock that makes the tree stay short. So if you want a small tree, be sure that you're asking for a dwarf rootstock, and that way you will be able to grow them in pots because they'll stay small.
So much to know.
Yeah, yeah. So to finish talking about pruning, we started to talk a bit about roses because that is another plant that needs to be pruned in January, and it's also another plant that is planted bare root in January, and that's again because they are I'm hesitating because I want to say that's because they're dormant in January, but in Southern California our roses just don't go dormant. But what we do to force them into a brief dormancy is we prune them. And so by pruning them, we force them into a brief dormancy. And January is the time when we do that. And what we want to do in that regard, and we should do a show just on roses too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Another idea for a show for 2016, an all rose show.
But I know who we're going to have as a guest.
Yeah.
You're truly Tina Spindler.
Oh, I don't know. There's a few other people we might want to have too. But yeah, we'll do an all rose show. But for now, when you're planning what to do in January, there's, you know, lots of information on the internet about rose pruning and on our website, which again is uccemg.com. And there will be rose information on there as well. But the basics of rose pruning is that you want to cut off about a third of the height of your bush. And when you're making the cuts, you want to do it just above a leaf that is pointing outward. In other words, if the leaf is pointing to the inside of the plant, you don't want to make your cut there. Because wherever you make your cut, that's where the new growth is going to start. And if you do it at a leaf where the leaf is pointing inward, then you're going to get branches pointing to the inside of your plant. So what are you going to have? You're going to have all these branches crisscrossing each other in the middle of your plant, and they're not going to grow very healthy. The air circulation is going to be impacted, and the shape of your rose bush isn't going to be very pretty. So you want to cut above a leaf that's pointing outward, and you want to leave about 4 to 6 canes on your rose bush if it's a bush, you know, a type rose, like a hybrid tea or a grandiflora. If it's a climbing rose, there's a completely different way of pruning. So we don't want people to prune all roses exactly the same. But the idea for a bush type rose is you want it to end up being vase shaped. which means that all of the canes that are left are pointing outward so that the center of the bush is clear and open like the inside of a vase.
Latina, why do we want it open?
Well, as I said, it's for air circulation, for health of the bush, and for form of the bush. Think about if you had all of the branches starting to grow towards the middle of the branch, you'd have this crisscrossing wiry mess, right? And you can imagine that the air couldn't get through there, and when the bush got wet, it would stay wet because there'd be all of these crisscrossing leaves and branches. So fungal disease loves moist, wet areas where the air doesn't circulate.
And so we open it up, show it to the sun, let air get through it. It looks prettier. It shows prettier, and it's easier to take care of.
It is, yeah. You know, then you don't have to dig your arm through those scratchy branches to try and clear out that middle later on during the year. Of course, you know, as the bush grows, you're going to get branches in the center. And so when you deadhead, it's always a good idea to deadhead the flower if it's pointing, growing from the inside of the branch all the way back to the main branch so that it continues to have
reach
growth
out.
Outside. Yeah, towards the outside. And then just like the fruit trees, after we prune, we want a dormant spray. And again, before we start pruning, let's mix up that dormant spray.
I've learned that lesson.
Yeah. So when you finish one bush, I mean, that's what I do, as I finish each bush, I spray them.
And if you put something in a bottle with dormant spray, mark it.
Oh, yeah.
You really got to mark it. You think you know what it is now, but in 6 months from now, you're going to have this unmarked bottle, and you're going, golly.
Yeah, you can just put I just use a piece of duct tape that you can pull mm-hmm. on and, you know, put off. If I'm mixing up a big bottle of dormant spray and I know I'm not going to use it all, I try to only mix up as much as I'm going to use that day. Mm-hmm. But if I'm mixing up a bunch of it because I know I'm going to be pruning, because I have 70 or 80 rose bushes, so I prune the whole month of January. I just take a piece of duct tape and I write on there, you know, what it is. Dormant oil, horticultural oil, mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, if I'm using a copper spray, I mark that it's a copper dormant spray. And because even over the course of a couple weeks, I might forget what I mixed
up. It's easy. Life happens.
Yeah. So if I mix up a big one and I'm not sure I'm going to use it all that day, but I'm going to use it the next week, then I just put a little tag on it so I know what I've got. And yeah, the main thing is to do your pruning, clean up all the pruning mess and any of the dead leaves that have fallen off the rose bush. Because remember, those leaves probably had powdery mildew, or they might have had rust, or they might have had black spot. And if you leave them laying on the ground, then those fungal spores are still there. And when you irrigate or when it rains, the water is going to bounce off of those leaves that have those spores, splash the spores back up onto the plant, and you'll have the same problem next year. So if you rake everything up, then spray, you're going to be killing an awful lot and getting rid of a lot of those fungal spores. And you're not going to, believe me, you're still going to have some disease, but you won't have as much.
And you just, well, it'll save you so much time down the line.
Later on,
and your
yeah.
garden will look so much better for it. Just a few more minutes now will save you hours later.
Yeah. And then the last thing that is a good thing to do when you prune your fruit trees and your rose bushes is mulch. So after you have sprayed, then you can lay down a nice several-inch layer of mulch on top of the ground, and that will, again, keep those, if there are any remaining spores of those fungal diseases on the ground, that keeps them from splashing up on the plant. And then, of course, the mulch keeps your weeds down, and it decomposes.
And it looks pretty.
Looks pretty.
It dresses up the garden.
Adds good stuff to the soil.
Mulch is good.
Mulch is good. We love mulch.
We all like mulch.
Yeah.
So remember to mulch. Well, guess what time it is, Tina?
Station identification.
It sure is. So I need to let everybody know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And also, the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. Okay, Tina, what should we talk about next?
Wow.
We've got so much we could still talk about. We only have a half hour.
I know. Well, here's the other thing that is my favorite thing to do in January, and it's so counterintuitive. So, January, would you normally think about tomatoes in January?
Well, yes.
Well, you and I do, right? But I know...
Tomatoes? Are we going to be talking about planting summer crops in January?
We are.
Summer crops, how counterintuitive.
Yeah.
It's dark out.
It's you know, not that we get super cold in Southern California, but it is probably the coldest month of the year, January and February. So you probably aren't thinking about tomatoes and peppers and squash in January, but... if you want to have some really unique varieties of vegetables and you want to plant them from seed, you have to start them the end of January. Or that's the recommended time. Because you always have to add 6 to 8 weeks onto the date when you plant your seeds, right?
Right.
So if we start the end of January, our seeds will be ready in, you know, we're going to have, they'll grow all of February. And into the middle of March, that's 6 weeks. And middle of March is when we can start planting out
summer vegetables.
So I know it seems really crazy, but in the beginning of January, get out your seed catalogs or go online. It's so fun.
So
I love
fun.
That.
I spend so much time just looking at them.
Yeah.
And it's hard to decide.
It is. And I always order more seeds than I ever plant.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah. But a cool thing is, and it's easy for us because we know lots of master gardeners, but if you have other friends who garden, share seeds. Because you can never, in our size gardens, because most of us have, you know, relatively small gardens. Katrina and I have pretty big gardens,
but
even
still
us.
I run out of room.
We run out of room. And so we share seeds. So if you want to try, you know, an heirloom tomato, that seed that you've seen online and you're not sure you're going to be able to find it in the nursery and you really want to try it this year, then order a packet of seeds and share the seeds with some friends.
Well, Tina, a lot of people don't know, once you get the seed packet, what do you do with it? It's January.
Yeah, so in January, you're going to want to start your seeds in the house because the warm season veggies are going to want some fairly warm weather in order to start, you know.
Warm season veggies like warm soil. Yes.
So what you can do is you can get some sterilized seed starting mix. That's what I recommend. You can use just regular potting mix, but the regular potting mix is sometimes kind of chunky. And so what I like to get, and they sell it all over, at the big box retailers, at the nurseries, it's just labeled seed planting mix or seed starting mix. And it's just a finer type of potting mix. It's just super fine. It doesn't have the chunks in it. And the reason that's good for seeds is a lot of these seeds are pretty tiny.
Yeah, little itty bitty guys.
Yeah, and so if they have to push their way around some chunk of something, it might discourage them from germinating or growing straight and tall. So I like the seed starting mix, and so I buy a bag of it, and that's what I use. And then you just need a container to put the seed starting mix in. You can get these really cool, like, mini greenhouse seed starting kits, and they are trays that come with the little six-pack cells in them. And then they also come with a clear lid, a little clear dome. And the reason those are cool is because they trap the moisture inside, and the seeds need both warmth and moisture in order for them to germinate. That's the most tricky thing for people who don't have good luck with seeds, is they probably didn't keep them evenly moist. And when you, what we call direct sow out in the garden, that's often what happens out in the garden because the sun is, you know, heating it up, which is good. But if you didn't remember to water and the seed dries out, it stops germinating. So in the house, it's a little bit easier because the sun is not going to be beating on and drying out your soil.
But even indoors, I like to use those little clear domes, and because it just keeps the moisture in, and I find that the germination happens pretty quick.
Now, do you use a heating pad under there?
I do. And it isn't totally necessary. In fact, if you have a refrigerator that isn't built in, the one I have now is built in, you know, so it doesn't, I can't get to the top of it. But in my previous house, you know, I could set things on the top of the fridge, and that was where I used to start my seeds, is because when you put your tray up on the fridge, it's nice and warm,
it's warm
up there. So what I do now is I bought a seed heating mat, and it's just kind of like a heating pad, but
yeah,
it's specifically for seeds. And it doesn't get hot. It's just like a gentle, like in the
warmth,
like 70 degrees.
It's bathing in warmth.
Yeah. And so you lay that under the containers that you've planted your seeds in so that it just has this steady soil temperature of, you know, probably in the high 60s or low 70s.
Yeah, I don't know if a lot of people are like my husband and I, when we leave, we turn the heat off in the house.
Yeah.
And it gets cold.
Yeah, down to 65 or 62 or whatever.
Whatever the temperature is.
Yeah. So yeah, the seed heating mat is great. But don't think that you have to have that, and you don't have to have the little dome mini greenhouse either. You can start seeds in old egg cartons. You can take plastic milk cartons and cut them in half and use, you know, those. Another thing that I really like to use is, you know, the things that berries come in with the lids?
Mm-hmm.
I love to use those because they have drainage holes in the little plastic container, and they have the lid that you can close, and so it turns into like a little mini greenhouse.
So what you're talking about is the berries you go to the grocery store.
The strawberry containers, you know? You know those?
Or the blueberries.
I like the strawberry ones because they're deeper. Mm-hmm. You know, the blueberry ones are usually only like an inch and a half tall. But I like the strawberry ones especially because they're, what, 3 inches or so high? But they have that lid. And
it just helps keep the warmth in.
It just keeps the moisture in, and it, you know, helps speed the germination. So
you could have a fun beginning of the year looking through catalogs, find
absolutely
something you like. Just something unique, and you know, you could always get six packs later, but there, we tend to get a lot of the same things in our nurseries.
We do.
If you want something a little different, a little fun, it's something you can do.
Yeah, there's, you know, there's some things like I love kale. That's my favorite vegetable the last couple of years. but I like the blue curly kale. That's the one I really like. And I looked all over this fall at all the nurseries, because I had tried planting stuff from seed, but remember how hot our fall was? And I just couldn't keep those seeds moist enough because we were out of town and different reasons. And so finally I thought, I'm just buying six packs, you know. And I could not find that blue curly kale anywhere. And so that is kind of the sad thing. You know, the nurseries only have so much room, and so they only have certain varieties. So if there's a variety that you really want, another thing that I always plant from seed is pickling cucumbers. You can find six packs of cucumbers in the nurseries, but it's hard to find the pickling cucumbers. And I love to make homemade pickles. So that's why I love the seed catalogs. I can plow through those seed catalogs, find those things that I really like that I am not sure I'm going to be able to find in the nursery, and then start them from seed.
How fun.
Yeah. Did you do anything last summer that you were especially fond of? A tomato variety or a pepper or anything?
Well, I just planted, I have a big yard, so I just planted one of everything. Or not quite one of everything, but we had a lot. I love sun gold tomatoes.
Sun golds, I do too.
I love, those are one of the little ones I just pick all the time.
And yeah.
You know, they're great if you have a smaller yard or a condo. You could plant them in a, you don't have to plant them in the ground. You can put them in a bucket because they're little like cherry tomatoes, and they're just absolutely wonderful. I think
really intense tomato flavor.
Intense. They're my favorite, and kids love them because they're sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think those are one of my very very favorites.
Yeah.
How about you?
You know, it was I would say from seed, I just really enjoyed the pickling cucumbers that I grew last year. The tomatoes, it wasn't a great year for me for tomatoes last year.
No, it wasn't a good year for us either.
Yeah. My sun golds did okay. The early girl did okay, but some of the other ones I tried, not so much. Yeah.
Yeah, just
so you never know. You know, that's why.
I had a good kale year.
Good kale year, yeah. Yeah, my kale lasted from, I think, October until July, and then we went on vacation, and they got infested with aphids, and I had to just pull them out. They were beyond repair at that point. But, yeah, just browse through the seed catalogs, choose your favorites, start them indoors, and the last step that I need to mention about the seed starting is you do want to take that lid off if you are using one of those little sets that has the little clear lid. Once the seeds germinate, you do want to take the lid off because you do want some nice air circulation.
Good point.
If you leave that lid on, it can be too moist and you might have some fungal diseases attack your baby seedlings. And then once they get to be about 2-3 inches high, you're going to want to transition them outdoors to a well-lighted patio area, but not in direct sun. They need to, what's called, harden off. They need to adjust themselves to outside for a few days, get used to those outdoor temperatures, and then you can gradually move them into more and more sun over the course of a week or so, and then finally just go ahead and plant them out in the garden about March, early March.
Depends on weather and how cold it is.
Exactly. So, and depends on when you planted the seeds, you know. Sometimes I don't get the seeds planted till the middle of February, and so then they might not be ready by the middle of March. It just depends. But it is really rewarding, though, to have things that you know you grew from seed, your very own self. I just find that one of the most rewarding things about gardening.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. Oh, I'm looking forward to it now. I feel like a little kid. I'm all excited all over again.
Yeah, it's fun to go through those seed catalogs, man. Oh, but before we get off the topic of vegetables, January and the winter in general is, I love winter vegetables.
Oh my gosh, broccoli and cauliflower.
Yeah.
Oh, so lettuces.
You can continue planting all of those in January from six. I would probably do 6 packs. In January of broccoli and cauliflower especially. But lettuce, you can still keep planting seeds, you know.
My husband and I, we started early this year with broccoli and cauliflower, and we plant like every couple weeks.
Absolutely.
And just, you don't have to plant a lot, but if you do it every couple weeks, you just have broccoli all and cauliflower all through the winter and your winter vegetables. And I love winter vegetables.
I do the same. I cheat with the broccoli and cauliflower. I do those from 6 packs just because I'm lazy. But I do plant seeds of lettuce, arugula, carrots, and green onions all through the winter. Like you said, about once a month I do a new row of especially arugula, carrots, and green onions because I use those so much, you know.
And I buy onion starts.
Yes.
And beginning of January, they'll be coming in real soon. And they're just easy, and I mail order them, and oh, my goodness.
Yeah, talk about that a little more, Katrina, about how you plant them and how they come. And
You know, I order, you can go on the internet. We eat out of our garden most of the year. I would say a good 10 months of the year, I'm self-sufficient on vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I have more limited space. So the onions, I buy onion starts. Do you get those onion starts too?
I do. And the reason that we do is Master Gardeners go together in a big group and we order a large quantity.
And we get them really a really good price, and it comes in just after the beginning of the year, and they're already ready to go by the time the days start getting longer, and they're ready to go and start, and it works really, really well. And you know, I plant a lot of onions, and then we dry them out after we harvest them, and then I ended up doing braids with them and hang them in my kitchen, and I could cut them off for months.
You have to send me a picture of that.
I will send you a picture of that,
because it's love just to beautiful. Have that.
People talk about it all the time because you just have braids of onions hanging down.
Oh, I really want a picture of that, so I'll put that in a little PowerPoint presentation for when I do, you know, some talks out and about. But a couple things to tell people about onions. The onions that Katrina and I are ordering are called short day onions. And if you live in Southern California, you have to grow short day onions. And the reason is that onions make a bulb based on day length. And in this latitude where we live, you have to get the short day onions. The long day onions are for more northerly.
Northern, where they have very, very long days.
In the summer.
And they even have some that are kind of in between the mid. And I haven't had good experience. I bought those and I planted them. And I just, this year I didn't buy any of them because the short days are the best bang for the buck for
they
me and my yard.
Yeah. I it's so funny because, you know, I would plant onions for years and I love to have fresh green onions because I hate buying a bunch of green onions at the supermarket and I use two and then the rest of them turn into mush before, you know, I get around to using them. So I love to grow green onions in the garden all year because then I don't waste all of those onions that I buy at the supermarket. But I also, from growing green onions, thought, well, I want to grow the big onions, the big bulb onions. And so I would plant seeds, and I would get, instead of the big bulb onions, I would get the fattest green onions you ever saw. They would never turn into the round onions. And I was thought, what am I doing wrong? You know, I just have a brown thumb or something. And I didn't. I was planting long-day onions. And so they never bulbed because the days are never long enough in this latitude. So finally, when I became a master gardener, I got clued in. And so to our listeners, be sure if you're planting onions from seed, that the seed packet says short day onion. Or if you're ordering the starts, and what the starts look like when you get them is they look like the skinniest green onions you ever saw. They're just like super skinny green onions.
And there's like a little, and they're little itty bitty, and there's like a rubber band around them, and they're just not much of anything. But oh my goodness, they're great.
But it's you save weeks by buying the starts. If you plant from seed, of course, it takes longer for the onion to get to full size.
You know, my house is also on a north side of the hill, so I never get as much sun as some people.
Yeah.
So I need all the help I can get
for a quick maturity.
Because I could plant the same, and it doesn't. I could plant one thing at my house, and I can plant the same thing in the same soil somewhere else. And because I don't quite have as much sun.
Yeah, and that's important for everybody to know. You have to take a look at the sun that you're getting in your vegetable garden, and it may change during the course of the year because the sun is lower in the sky in the winter and higher in the sky in the summer. And so I have a friend who gardens strictly in wine barrels, and she does fine in the summer because the sun's directly overhead. But in the winter, she can barely grow lettuce because the sun is low in the sky, and she doesn't get enough sun for a lot of things. So do be sure that you're looking at how much sun you get when you're choosing, you know, where to place your garden.
Oh, my goodness.
Or your pots.
Yes, indeed.
Well, should we talk a little bit about non-edible plants? We've talked a little bit about roses, but let's talk about the rest of our yard. January is a time to take a good look at your yard and decide what you're going to do with it to make some changes. Because if you're going to plant some new things, you can often find some plants that are bare root, like roses and fruit trees. But also the time to plant natives is in January. So if you've been wanting, not just January, but in the winter months. So we start planting natives late October, good in November, good in December, good in January, good in February, even into March. But after that, once it starts getting into the hotter weather, it's better to have your natives planted earlier when it's cooler and when we get, hopefully, the rain. Yeah. So if you are having time after the bustle of the holidays to take a good look at your garden, maybe there's areas where you want to remove turf and plant some drought-tolerant stuff, it's a great time of year to do that.
You know, it's also a good time of the year because of visual. Everything's not bushed out.
Absolutely.
And it's able to see the rawness of your garden.
Absolutely.
And see how big things really are and what you can do there.
Yeah, you're right, Katrina. You can often see more of the structure of your garden.
That's the word I was looking for.
And you can see, that's all one height in that section. I should really put something that's add a tall thing, you know, or, those things are all too close together. I should, you know, pull a couple things out.
And now's the time to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a great thing to do as a big cleanup and a big analysis of
of your garden.
You know what we haven't talked about yet? Will you tell us about what we should do with our lawns?
Yeah, for those of us who are continuing to have a little bit of lawn, if you have a cool season lawn, like a fescue, you want to fertilize your cool season lawns in the cooler weather. So you don't fertilize your cool season lawns in July and August and September. You feed them in the cooler months. If you have a warm season lawn, it will probably be looking brownish this time of year. And that isn't necessarily because you weren't watering it. It's because the warm season lawns with cooler weather go into a bit of a dormant stage. And so they can start looking, you know, brown just because they're dormant. The other thing that's good to do if you are keeping a little patch of lawn is to aerate it this time of year. And that is, you can buy machines that actually poke holes through your turf and into the soil below.
And if you have a gardener, a lot of gardeners have
that machine.
Ask them to do it.
Or I actually have a hand one, and it looks, it's this weird little, it has a handle across the top and a long stem, and then down at the bottom it has a horizontal piece of metal, and out of that horizontal piece of metal that's about 10 inches in width, there's a post on either edge of that that goes right into the soil, that takes a little core of soil out, and you just step on it and it pokes it in, takes the little core of soil out, and then you just move through your lawn. And if you have a relatively small lawn, you can just do it that way. And that's what I do. My lawn's, you know, small to medium. And I learned this summer by only watering that thing, you know, twice a week, that I was actually still able to keep the lawn. And I was only watering it, surprisingly, as much as I was watering the, you know, the perennial beds. And they were both surviving on the same amount of water.
You got your roots to grow deep in your lawn.
Mm-hmm. And it did turn brown in patches, you know, but it was, hey, you know, you're either going to learn to live on less water or you're going to have to leave. So so far I have been keeping the lawn, but every water district is different. And I'm fortunate because my water district provides reclaimed water. And so I am able to have... you know, landscape irrigation that isn't as rationed as it is in other places. So it's a decision that you have to make personally based on your water allocation. I know your water district has made you really cut back, and so a lot of your lawn you've just decided to let die.
Well, I was worried about having huge... I have a big yard with lots of fruit trees, and they're treating my fruit trees as though they were drought-tolerant plants.
Oh, geez, not so much.
exactly. So I've been really miserly about water, and I can't believe how much I really can cut back and still having things. I'm way under what my allotment is to stay in the lower tiers, and I've killed some grass there. I have dirt, but I was really concerned about having, you know, a huge water bill. And you know, now I'm kind of learning about how much do I really need. I know I don't need as much as I was using, and I could probably use a little bit more and still be within my guidelines. I kind of went overboard as far as no water, and fortunately not as much died as I thought, and fortunately I'm within my limits.
Good for you. That's the best thing I think that has come out of this drought, is it has made us all be more water aware.
And I thought I was mindful.
Mm-hmm. And I thought I was mindful too, but I'm way more mindful than I used to be. And I'm more observant. And so I'm actually looking at the plants and saying, you're doing okay with that much water. I'm not gonna give you any more, you know. And
then I picked a couple plants I didn't want to lose that I knew took a lot of water, and they got my sink water.
Right. Or, you know, my fruit trees get, you know, they're on a separate station and they get an extra watering, you know, that the perennial beds and the lawn don't get. But, you know, to me they're important because they're giving me food, so they get a little more water than everybody else. they get a deeper, longer watering than everybody else. So, that's
That's pretty much for lawn care. Feed your cool season lawns. Don't feed your warm season lawns until we get to warmer weather in the late spring.
Yeah.
And then as far as any decorative flowers, I still do that in small beds. And I do that in pots. So if you still want to spruce up some of those areas in January, you would want to continue with the cool season flowers, pansies, snapdragons, Iceland poppies, those sorts of things. We won't start planting our warm season transplants of like marigolds and vinca and stuff like that. Again, same time we plant our warm season vegetables, so that would be in March. But again, if you want to plant seeds of warm season flowers, January is the time to do it. And every year, I have to admit, I plant zinnias because I cannot get... When you go to the nurseries, they always sell zinnias in mixed colors. I hate mixed colors because I have pretty big flower beds and I don't want to have an orange zinnia next to a pink zinnia. I just don't think that looks very nice. I want to have a whole thing of pink zinnias and then a separate area, a whole, you know, thing of orange ones or purple ones or whatever. So by planting them from seeds, I can get single colors.
And you can also get the taller ones.
Exactly. Because I love to cut flowers. So I get the taller zinnias. I get the taller cosmos. Because in the nurseries, they're often just showing you these really short varieties mm-hmm. that look great in pots. But if you have a yard where you want to have something that's more...
big and pop.
Yeah, you have to grow it from seed yourself, yeah. amazingly. So, but it's fun. It's so fun.
It is fun, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And just as a recommendation, if folks want to try it for the first time, do zinnias and cosmos. They are stupidly simple to grow from seed. So give those a try if you want to try it for the first time.
Couple packages and there you go.
Yeah,
it's fun. And with that, Tina, we are just about at our time.
Cool. Well, I hope we covered everything we needed to in January.
Oh, there's so much to talk about.
Like I said, it's one of my busiest months in the garden.
All right. Well, I thank you, and I thank the listening audience, and I really appreciate all your wisdom, Tina, and thank you for listening to In the Garden with UC Master Gardeners.